So this evening, I would like to continue to look at the theme of the day, one of the components we have been looking at today, which is feeling tone, or you could call it affective tone. And I think what is very important in terms of the mindfulness of the feeling tone, one of the components. So in a way, as we mentioned in the discussion, it's when we talk about them, we have to talk about the different elements separately. Attention, intention, contact, feeling tone, and tomorrow perception. But actually they co-arise. So in a way, all of them are operating together. They come together. And so you have what we could call the basis, like the kind of the basic functioning of it. And then there is kind of that what we try to develop through the practice of meditation. So they become more refined, one could do. And you could also, so they become more friendly, and also they become more wise. So in a way there is more clarity involved. And one of the things we have to be very careful about is sometimes when we talk about the feeling tones, you might get the impression, we did not do that today, but just in case, you might get the impression that actually we need to go back to just have just neutral feeling tone. Sometimes people seem to have the idea that we need to bring everything down to just neutral, which is really not the idea at all. But actually what Sari was pointing out, to be as aware of the unpleasant, of the pleasant, and of the state which is neither, which we call neutral for short, which cannot be very obvious sometimes. But in a way, we don't want to be aware of the tonality just for its own sake. So I can know, oh, this one is kind of like pleasant plus 5, or it's unpleasant minus 3, or it's neutral. But actually, the main idea in terms of the practice for the Buddha was to become aware of the underlying tendency. That, to me, what is very interesting about the tonality is that we have such a fast reaction, as was pointed out, to it. And that's what the Buddha called the underlying tendency. And so basically, as it was suggested this morning, if it's pleasant, we want more. We want it to continue. We want it to repeat itself. If it's unpleasant, we don't want it. We push it away. And with the neutral, we are a little confused. So it can go either way, actually. You can be with the neutral and it's restful and maybe it becomes a little pleasant, or you can think it's terribly boring and then off you go and it becomes very unpleasant. So that's what, in a way, we are kind of trying to work with. So, one of the texts which is very good in terms of that, it's what's called, in a way, the 108 Vedana. So it's a text where the Buddha talks about 108 types. So I won't kind of go into great detail on each, but talking about this 108 is to kind of see the range of things that we are looking at. And so that in that way, in terms of meditation, but especially in terms of daily life, we could really have this wide range exploration. So let me go through the text and then I'll take bits of it. In one way, O monks, I have spoken of two kinds of feeling, in other way of 3, 5, 6, 18, 36, and 108. And of course, I mean, Buddhists like 108, so I think he kind of did a little math there so that it fitted. But so what are the two feelings? And this is why sometimes the term Vedana that Sari introduced, so that's the original language, and Vedana can be translated in different ways. Sometimes it's translated as sensation. And if you have ever done a Goenka retreat, which talk a lot about the Vedana, and then they will really see them through the prism of sensation. Other people will talk more affective tone, other people will just use the term feeling. But when the term feeling is mentioned, it does not refer to complex emotion. So we're not talking about happiness, or we're not talking about anger or fear. So here we again talking about something more basic, point of contact, up at the same moment something arrives, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And then of course that might lead to have a more complex emotion. But when they talk about feeling, they actually refer to something more basic, not something so complex. And so that's why the first numbers, what are the two feelings, bodily and mental feelings. So here he's pointing out that sometimes we experience a tonality more in terms of the body. So we really experience something in the body. And then also, when a thought arises, then that will be more, you'll have more like a mental tonality. But at the same time, when you react to a sensation, and as was mentioned yesterday evening, you grasp at it, then here too you're going to bring in more mental feeling. So then when he talk about mental, he refer to the contact with the thought, but also one could say to the commenting that might come if we have more like a tonality which is bodily. But in the end, we experience it in the body anyway. And often, when we talk about these two aspects of tonality, mental and bodily, we're not trying in experience to separate them. So we're not trying to make fixed category. But we can also explore, and sometimes it will come more from the mind. And sometimes it will come more from reaction within the body. So when, for example, there is a talk about trauma, and then a lot of the trauma will be kind of, there you'll have a lot of tonality, intense tonality, which a lot of it will be extremely physical. And that's why in a way, sometime when we give instruction to be aware of the body, we have to be careful with that. That sometime if you have had some trauma, then too much focusing on the body, then actually there are too much tonality. And then it might be better in a way to be aware of the sounds before kind of gently, gently coming to the body. So that's why we, in terms of the mental and the bodily feeling, in a way here we can also adjust a little. What are we putting our attention on? More in a way the mentality of it and the commenting of it and things like that? Or is it sometimes more the physicality of it? Then what are the three feelings? So that's what we presented today. Pleasant, painful, and neither painful nor pleasant feelings. Then there is an interesting category. What are the five feelings? The faculty of pleasure, of pain, of gladness, of sadness, and equanimity. So here we kind of starting to see something a little more complex, you could say, around the tonality. That actually we can have, you could say, more pleasure, something feel really great pleasure, something feels painful. Or then there is this tonality of gladness, of joy. Or there is a tonality of sadness. Or there is a tonality of equanimity. So that kind of, in a way, again, makes it a little more complex. And then we can, because this is, in a way, what we can notice, for example, if something is pleasant. Or, because something is pleasant, we like it. When we like something, there is actually gladness. Yesterday I had kind of like a mixed sadness and gladness when it started to snow. My first thing was gladness. Snow. Where I live, southwest of France, this winter we saw snow for about 2 minutes. I kind of saw a few flakes and then poof, it was gone. But when I saw this snowflake yesterday, snow. And so, because I like snow, obviously because I don't live in Finland, and it's a rare event for me, you might like it too. Then there was this lightness, there was this gladness because of that object. And then there was a thought. And then that's where, if you don't have the wisdom of knowing impermanence, because I could see the thought, but it happened once a few years back nearly, what if it snowed all night and we cannot get out? Because once I was in Italy, teaching in November, and it snowed. And then people were so worried too, left to not be stuck by the snow, when actually by the next day it was gone. So you can see, you see something, and then you can have the gladness, or then you can have like the worry or the pain, you like it becomes a little more mental. And then you have, what are the six feelings? And then basically they are what we talk about today, the six feelings from the six sense impression. But then you get a little more complexity. That's what the text is great. So what are the six feelings? The feeling born of sense impressions through eyes, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. So that's six. But then, you're going to multiply this by three. But what are the eight feelings? They are the above of the sixth sense impression, by which there is an approach to the object in gladness, sixth approach in gladness, sixth approach in sadness, sixth approach in equanimity. Then, now we're starting to look at contact. So through contact, immediately arises a tonality. And then it's pleasant. And is a pleasantness going to bring the gladness? And there is at the back, are you going to grasp at the gladness? Because that's in a way the little bit. We'll talk more about this, but there is that little hook. Something is pleasant. There is this gladness, lightness arising. Am I just with it? Am I just appreciating it? Or am I grasping at it? So this is a little kind of what in a way the meditation is about in terms of contact. Or there is contact through the senses, and then There might be more because it's unpleasant. There might be more like sadness because we're not experiencing what we wanted to experience, or because we've lost something, or etc. And so because it's unpleasant, and then if we get a little, in a way, taken by it, that's a thing with lots of study I've been done with unpleasant, not in terms of Buddhism, but in terms of psychology and research, that if unpleasant affective, what they call valence, unpleasant affective valence, affective tone, we are much more aware of that outside of being mindful. So, and why is that? It's normal that we have kind of this bias that is kind of nearly like, of course we want to be comfortable, we want to be in a pleasant state, or at least in a neutral state. And so any unpleasant state, any unpleasant feeling tone, in a way is saying danger, in a way. And so we have a little bias, and we kind of have a little radar to notice this more. So here what is useful in terms of this sadness and gladness and equanimity is to notice that actually gladness we take a little for granted. Like if something is pleasant, it's pleasant, why not? And often if you look, like if you'd had a scale of 0 to 10 pleasant, 0 minus to 10 unpleasant, then a lot of the time it has to be plus 5 pleasant before we actually become glad. And we think, wow, this is nice, this is great. And generally between 0 and 5, it's like, it's normal. It should be that way. This is kind of like the benchmark. And only when it goes above 5, it's like, that's a little more. And so in a way one could say that the practice of the mindfulness is to see more of the range. Instead of being aware of pleasant and having the gladness from 5 to 10, maybe we might see, the whole range. Recently I taught my seniors a day of meditation. And so I send them outside to just be aware, not to talk to each other, just like you are doing here, but just for a few hours, very little. And then there was this man say, by being in silence, by being more slow, then I could really look at everything and really be present to everything. And through that, actually he was aware that there was an extension of the range, that that little tree or that leaf or that, and then from that actually there was some gladness. But as we have this bias a little toward being very quickly aware of what is unpleasant, then we're more likely quickly to go toward the sadness, toward the this is awful, poor me, and it's kind of like this. So it's not just having an unpleasant feeling tone. There is this kind of like associative quality. That's what is, a little difficult with unpleasant feeling tone, is that it's very associative. So you might have an unpleasant feeling tone because of something which is happening now, but we're very likely to say, but it's like yesterday, or it's like a month ago, and we're very likely to, it's always like this. So we have that kind of bias, and then actually it could be that you have a minus one unpleasant, but quickly it could become minus five. Just because of that, then we go back to the mentality, because of the amplifying through the grasping at that. And so here the idea is not saying there is no unpleasant, there is. And if it's unpleasant, of course, there might be some sadness. But can we not be hooked by it? You know, it's kind of like, can we creatively engage with it? Instead of, often what happens is that we're overwhelmed by the sadness. And then the possibility of equanimity in terms of, can I be with what is happening? Can I bring some calm? Can I bring some balance to this? Then, what are the 36 feelings? There are 6 feelings of gladness based on the household life and 6 based on renunciation. 6 feelings of sadness based on the household life and 6 based on renunciation and 6 feelings of equanimity on the household life and 6 based on renunciation. And here he's starting to say that, yeah, you can have, you encounter an object, a situation, you have a pleasant feeling tone, there is gladness because of that, but it could be just what he calls ordinary gladness, mundane gladness. It's just like in contact, you experience it. But the slight difficulty with that is that actually that tonality, like everything else, is impermanent. So then if we base a gladness on this feeling now, this object is giving me this feeling, and this object will give me this feeling forever after, and we might have that experience. You buy a new book, you buy a new painting. How long does it last that you're happy to have the car, the painting, whatever it is? I mean, when you get it, yeah, wow, this is great, this is fantastic. But do you go every 2 minutes looking at the car? And wow, this is great. Generally not. You have to eat your breakfast, you have to wash the dishes. And the thing cannot, this is the thing cannot, you know, we give you lasting gladness. Do you know, it's kind of like being careful with that. The same with the sadness. If we really grasp at the sadness, then this can be extremely difficult. And what he means by ordinary equanimity is interesting. He says it's like, I don't care. It doesn't bother me, so who cares? So actually it's not like wise equanimity. It's more what we would call indifference. So you feel neutral because you don't care. It doesn't matter. You don't feel concerned. At the moment there is all this work being done about ecology. And then suddenly there is lots of people now saying, this is important. But up to now, a lot of people say, well, it's okay. I don't care. They're equanimous in terms of it, because right now it doesn't affect them. Then, yeah, I don't care. I am equanimous in terms of that. And then some people are saying, wait a minute. If we don't care now, if we're not concerned now, then later on it's going to be much more difficult. But it's easy to say, I don't care. Especially, I don't care because it does not affect me. But some other people it might really affect. Then you have, in a way, the gladness based on renunciation. And this you could say had 2 aspects. One aspect is in a way to appreciate things because you know they're not going to last. Because if we take life for granted, then we go a little toward the indifference. But here, actually, we could just rejoice, and that's why there is this quality, appreciative joy, that we can, oh, I'm feeling a pleasant feeling too. This is agreeable. There is gladness. But I am not grasping at it. So that's, in a way, to see the difference between the gladness which is connected to the object, and in the gladness knowing, ah, yes, I can use this object, but at some point it will pass. And then we're going to have a different relationship to it. Then there is a renunciation, the sadness based on renunciation. What does that mean? Actually, here, often when you talk of the sadness in terms of ordinary life, often it's because you're sad because you don't have something that you want, or you lost something that you had. And here, he said the sadness based on renunciation is actually the aspiration to wisdom, the aspiration to compassion. So in a way, it's kind of like a little sadness, you could nearly say humility, of knowing I am not totally wise yet. I am not totally compassionate yet. In some term, you could say, I am not awakened yet. But I aspire to be. So, you know, it's kind of like based on recognizing that, yes, we can have moments of being wise, of being compassionate, but sometimes we're not. And then to aspire to, oh, I was not. So, you know, being sad, I mean, I was in Bordeaux the other day, and there was a person asking for money on the street, and she seems to be sleeping on the street, and I really did not know what to do. I thought, should I wake her up, ask her if she's okay, should I just give money? I mean, I was really in a quandary. So I just passed, and actually I felt very sad that actually I had not done anything. And I still feel sad that I did not stop, at least give her some money, or ask her if she was okay, or things of that nature. And so in a way, I am sad because I was aspiring to respond in a more creative way, which I did not do at that moment. So in a way, it's that kind of sadness which is based on aspiration, seeing that, oh, I missed it here, but I can still aspire differently. And then there is an equanimity based on renunciation. And this means that it's not indifference. But again, it's an equanimity which comes from really knowing impermanence. And to me, this is what is very important to see, that equanimity is really not about indifference. But equanimity is really about, in a way, becoming more, you could say, serene or at peace or equanimous, meaning more balanced, because you know intimately that things are impermanent, but they still exist. So how do I encounter a situation, that they're bad or that they're good, pleasant or unpleasant? How do I encounter situation? Can I bring that quality? And to me, this is one of the... Tomorrow we'll talk more about the qualities. But I would say at the root of wise compassion, you have this equanimity based on this renunciation, based on really knowing impermanence. Because I feel that if we really know impermanence, then out of that arise compassion. And I would say, out of that arise compassion in two different ways. One way is, in a way, if we connect to the breath. My teacher used to say, our life rests upon a single breath. What are you going to do with this life, which rests upon a single breath? And I think if we really know that, I think we would treat ourselves and others differently. We would not take ourselves for granted, we would not take others for granted. And then we would, tomorrow, I think this is very connected to perception. I'll talk more about this tomorrow. Of kind of when we see somebody, do we see the person now in this arising condition? Or do we see the person we talked to 10 days ago? Or we have 10 years history together? Are we meeting them with the whole history? Or are we meeting them as a human being right now? So I would say that this equanimity, this feeling tone based on renunciation, in a way is what can give rise to compassion. And then, the last one, we're getting to the numbers. And then, what are the 108 feelings? So we have our number. They are the above 36 of the past, 36 of the future, 36 of the present. And then altogether, it's 108. So here, I think it's also really another area we can really explore. That actually you also have tonality connected to the past. And very likely you experience this during the retreat, sitting or walking in meditation. I mean, you are here. Hopefully you are here. But suddenly you might be 10 days ago. And maybe 10 days ago was unpleasant. And then suddenly, the tonality of 10 days ago, whoop, plonk, right there. Or you might worry about the future. And then, right now you're okay, I hope so, but then you could worry about the future, and then that future tonality, puff, comes here. And so that's what we can really look at in terms of the tonality I'm experiencing right now. Is it to do with the present, to which I can do something about? Or is it to do with the past? Because sometimes we sit in meditation and we suddenly think of something we have done in the past. And we think, oh, if only I had done this, and I was such a bad person, and I should have done this, or I should have done that, or if only this had not happened. And so in a way, we're here in the present, trying to re-engineer the past. But we cannot do that. I mean, we can learn from the past. We can learn from what happened, what were the conditions. We can recognize that we are not the same person that we were then. We can appreciate that maybe we did the best we could within that situation, considering what we knew or could do then. And that now it's different. I think this is an interesting place to explore, especially when we are on a retreat, to notice, am I having the feeling tone of this present experience? Or am I having the feeling tone coming from the past? And in a way, kind of coloring the present. The future can be, again, we can really frighten ourselves with the future. What if this happened? What if that happened? The thing is that our creative potential can only work in the present. The future, it's abstract. it's in a way, the future is a mental construct. And so we cannot do anything with our creative potential there. But right now, yeah, we could bring creative potential to the situation. Or another thing we can do is, for example, we might experience that in meditation. I used to do that a lot. At the beginning when I sat, you sit there and you daydream. And you daydream that you get going to be a great heroine, or you daydream that... Me, I used to daydream, you know, one of my favorite ones. I had two favorite ones. And I was sitting 10 hours a day, so I had lots of opportunity. So one, I would become a kung fu mistress. And the other one, I was going to a hermitage, awaken and save everybody. And these were extremely pleasant. So that was very pleasant feeling too. More pleasant than the, at that time, present feeling tone of sitting there 10 hours a day, and it was a little painful. So then, whoops! Then I went into this future feeling tone. And then finally, I decided I would try to do kung fu. And I lasted half an hour. So that went. And then I realized I was not meditating. I was dreaming about meditating. And that was not the same thing. So then I let that go. But to really see that kind of in the future, we can either have very pleasant or we can have very unpleasant. But in a way, what is funny is that we experience it. But it's not real in a way. That's what is fascinating with that. It doesn't mean we cannot aspire to something. It doesn't mean we cannot move towards something. But I think it's kind of trying to, the Buddha is trying to make us aware. In a way, there are enough feeling tone in the present. You have 36 in the present. Can we work on that? And try not to get so lost in others. And the one thing about the daydreaming which is problematic is in daily life. Like if in daily life, because you're having a little, maybe difficult or very difficult situation, it's unpleasant, so you do daydreaming. But if you do lots of daydreaming, the daydreaming is very pleasant. Lots of gladness. Because you do everything. It's like a film. You are the actor, the director, the producer. You even sell the peanuts in the cinema. So then everything goes according to plan. But then when you finish the daydream, you come back to your life. And then that life is multidimensional. And things might not go according to plan. Really to be careful with that. The creative function of imagining, aspiring, and the frustration that can come to be too much in that pleasant future. So in a way here, what the Buddha is suggesting is through the door of the mindfulness of the feeling tone. To first to be more, to me what I find wonderful about this practice is that it kind of creates more range in terms of the pleasant, more range in terms of the unpleasant, to realize that -1 is not -10, it's not the same thing. But we can make -1 become -10. So I think that's what the Buddha is helping us. That, okay, there is an unpleasant feeling tone. How can we be with that? How can we creatively engage with it without adding anything to it? But also with the pleasant, extending the range. But also personally I feel the neutral range is also interesting, because in also you have a text which talks of the worldly feeling tone and the unworldly feeling tone. And I think somebody in the discussion mentioned that. That what is also interesting to look at is when we experience this friendly, caring and careful mindfulness, actually it has a tonality, which is kind of like there is this gladness based on renunciation. So it's kind of like we feel something lighter. And personally, I believe this is why mindfulness up to a point works, because it brings some lightness. It brings a different quality of this pleasant tonality. And also, with this kind of, in meditation, we might experience sometime some quietness and clarity. Or we can experience that we suddenly feel very loving. And again, when we experience this in meditation, it's kind of, it has a little bit of a different quality. And the different quality is because in that moment, we are not grasping. Because in a way, often, we are grasping at me, for me, at me and mine. And that has a tendency, actually, to make things a little heavy. And to kind of, in a way, restrain kind of our field. And so that's what is often interesting when we do a retreat, like you're doing, is that time to time, you have this moment, these moments where, oh, either there is this special quality to the mindfulness, or there is a special quality to feeling the body, or to experiencing some quietness, some clarity. And actually what we're experiencing is that, in a way, liberation of experiencing ourselves without grasping, without tension, as Sari mentioned yesterday. And so then that again is a little different tonality. It doesn't mean that we need to have that tonality all the time, because that tonality of the mindfulness, that tonality of the meditative experience will depend on the condition. And so that's why at that level, when we sit at home, sometimes we can have a glimpse of the quality when we sit or when we are in daily life. And for myself, what I find interesting in daily life is like kind of moving to kind of a tonality which is a little more grasping, and then up returning to something which is more this mindfulness, this balance. And I think one of the interesting places to try it out is a supermarket. If you are in a queue in a supermarket, and then you are in the supermarket, and of course you look for the better queue. You know, anything, that one. So, you know, toward that one you have a little better feeling tone. And then you get in the queue, and then you realize it's the stuck one. Somebody doesn't have the right money, or the right this, or that. And then, from pleasant feeling tone to the right queue, you have the unpleasant feeling tone to the wrong queue. And then it's interesting. Can I just stand there? Can I just be mindful in this moment? And just bringing that friendly mindfulness really change the experience. Because you can, at the beginning, you can see yourself, I got the right cue, I'm hopeless, why do I always get the right, wrong cue? Why? You know, I must be more perspicacious. And just, it's okay. It's just okay to be there. Just in that moment, with those people, in this place. And so, in a way, to see how we actually can move sometime from this more ordinary tonality to one more based on actually the experience we might have had here. That means I'll finish here.